Zona Heesterschuh was young and in love in 1897, but her life was cut short when she was murdered. She's known in West Virginia lore as the Greenbrier Ghost. That's because in June of 1897, her ghost helped solve her murder and convict the man who killed her. It's one of the most unique legends in America. This is the legend of the Greenbrier Ghost. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. Elva Zona Heester was born in Greenbrier County, West Virginia, around 1873. She was the eldest daughter of a successful farmer, Jacob Heester, and his wife, Mary Jane. Most of what is known about Zona, as she was called, has made her infamous in death. Little is known about her early years, apart from Zona giving birth to a child out of wedlock when she was 22 years old. In 1895, this was controversial, and it tarnished her reputation. There's no record of what became of her child or who the father may have been, but one thing was sure. Zona knew she needed a husband, and she needed to work on mending her reputation. Maybe that's why Zona was so willing to fall in love, and fall in love quickly. In October of 1896, Zona met a man who would change the course of her life. Erasmus Stribling Trout Shoe, who was known as Edward, was a drifter who came to Greenbrier County from Pocahontas County, West Virginia. He was in search of a job as a blacksmith, and he found work in the shop of James Cruikshanks. Soon after Edward had arrived in town, Zona and her mother visited James Cruikshanks' shop, and Zona was immediately smitten with the very attractive Edward Shoe. She returned to the shop to make it clear to the handsome blacksmith that she was interested. Edward and Zona had a whirlwind romance. During their courtship, Edward told Zona he was looking to make a fresh start after experiencing some trying times. After only a few weeks, they were engaged. And by November of 1896, the two were married. As is often true of young lovers, Zona seemed to be in a state of bliss when she married Edward. From all we know, she was madly in love with him. So in love that she ignored her mother's objections, her mother's concerns. Zona's mother, Mary Jane Heester, was not in favor of the match because she had taken an instant dislike to Edward Shoe. She told her daughter that she had no information or reason to give other than she just didn't have a good feeling about Edward. But Zona was in love and assumed her mother was being overly protective. Edward and Zona Shoe moved into a home in Lewisburg, West Virginia, near the blacksmith shop where Edward worked. In early January of 1897, Zona became ill and was treated by Dr. George Knapp, who said Edward Shoe was attentive and seemed loving to his wife when she was ill. But in late January, Dr. Knapp returned to the home of Edward and Zona when he was alerted that Zona had been found dead just 3 months after her marriage to Edward. On January 23rd, 1897, Edward Shoe was on his way to work at the blacksmith shop when he stopped by a neighbor's home to ask if their 11-year-old son, Andy Jones, could do some chores at the Shoe home that day. Young Andy agreed, and by 11 a.m. that day, he arrived at the Shoe home. When Andy went inside, he stopped just inside the door, seemingly in shock. As he walked in, he had seen Zona Shoe's body at the bottom of the stairs. The boy would later tell his mother that he stood there for a while, not realizing what he was seeing. He remembered calling to Mrs. Shoe, whose body was stretched out straight with her legs together, one arm at her side, the other rested across her chest. Her head was tilted to one side. The boy thought perhaps she was asleep, but after he had called to her and she had not moved, reality seemed to set in, and he quickly ran from the house to find his mother. It was his mother who called for the local coroner and doctor, George W. Knapp. 23-year-old Elva Zona Heaster Shue was dead. Dr. Knapp would arrive at the Shue's home an hour after the boy's mother had called for help. Edward Shue had arrived at the home before the doctor and had already moved his wife's body to their upstairs bedroom. Edward had redressed her for burial, which was an odd thing to do at the time. Normally, women prepared bodies for burial, but Edward had chosen one of Zona's Sunday best for her burial gown, a lovely dress with a high and stiff collar. Edward had also covered his wife's face with a veil. Dr. Knapp moved towards Zona's body to examine her. As the local doctor, he was also the coroner and responsible for determining the cause of death. But as the doctor came near, Edward Shue became distressed and seemed emotionally overpowered. Dr. Knapp looked upon Edward Shue, who was cradling Zona's head and shoulders and sobbing over his dead wife's body, making it difficult for the doctor to conduct a proper examination. He needed to determine the cause of death. Dr. Knapp had noticed that the body showed signs of being deceased far longer than just a few hours. And when he noticed a slight discoloration on the right side of Zona's cheek and her neck, he tried to examine the area. But Edward Shue protested so fiercely that the doctor felt he had to end the examination. He never reported the suspicious circumstances to the police. He simply labeled Zona as having died of an everlasting faint and left the home. Later, Dr. Knapp would officially record the cause of death as childbirth. We have no evidence that Zona was pregnant at the time of her death, but some believe that may have been why the doctor had been called to treat Zona just weeks before she died. Zona's body was taken to her parents' home on Little Sewell Mountain. Her family planned to have a peaceful wake and funeral for her, but Edward Shue's behavior would drive Zona's mother to believe something truly sinister had happened to her daughter. Mary Jane Heaster had felt that her daughter's marriage to Edward would not work out, but she never imagined her daughter would die 3 months after she was married. Her instincts told her something just wasn't right, that Edward had a hand in her daughter's death, but the doctor had listed the cause of death as childbirth. All she could do was try to get through her daughter's funeral and face her grief one day at a time. But during Zona's wake, Mary Jane Heaster became even more certain that Edward Shue was up to no good. During the wake, Edward exhibited strange behavior, and it wasn't just Zona's mother who noticed this. Neighbors noticed and mentioned it to Mary Jane Heaster. Edward Shue would quickly transition from a grieving husband, overwhelmed by grief, to a man who was nervous and annoyed, even seemed paranoid. Edward placed a rolled-up cloth on one side of Zona's head and a pillow on the other side of her head, as if he was trying to keep it in place. And Edward refused to allow anyone near Zona at the wake. In addition to her high-collar burial gown that Edward had dressed her in, Edward also placed a large scarf around Zona's neck, telling people in the room that it was her favorite, so she needed to be buried wearing it. As the wake was ending and men were preparing to move Zona's coffin and take her to the cemetery for burial, a few people noticed that there was an odd looseness to Zona's head. Zona was laid to rest, and her mother, Mary Jane Heaster, was left with the weight of knowing something wasn't right. But there was nothing she could do about it. She had no proof that Edward was involved in Zona's death, only a mother's instinct. At the end of Zona's wake, her mother had taken the cloth that Edward had placed against Zona's neck inside her coffin. She tried to return it to Edward, but he refused to take it. Mary Jane took it home and kept it in remembrance of her daughter. And soon after, strange things started happening in Mary Jane Heaster's home. Mary Jane noticed that the sheet she had taken from her daughter's coffin had a strange odor about it. She did what most of us would do She decided to wash it. She filled a washing bowl with water, and when she submerged the sheet in the bowl, the water turned red. Mary Jane was shocked by what she saw. She scooped some of the water from the basin, and to her disbelief, the water was clear. But the sheet that had been white just minutes before was stained pink. Mary Jane tried to remove the stain, washing it again, boiling it, and hanging it in the sun. But the stain was still there. Mary Jane was sure of one thing. Something about this was a message from her daughter, Zona. A message that her daughter's death had not been due to natural causes. Mary Jane made a vow then and there to pray each day that Zona would somehow reveal the truth of how she died. Mary Jane prayed that prayer every day for weeks. And finally, Mary Jane Heaster got the answer she was so desperately seeking. Late one night, as Mary Jane sat in her home, she saw the spirit of her daughter in the form of a bright light that lit a room in her home. And over the next 4 days, Zona would appear little by little until she took on human form. When Zona appeared, she told her mother how she died. Zona told her mother that Edward Shue was a cruel man who had beaten her. And on the day she died, his violent nature had gotten the best of him. He lost control and became angry at Zona when he learned that she had not prepared meat for his dinner. In his rage, he attacked his wife and broke her neck, as if to prove to her mother what had happened in her final moments among the living. The ghost of Zona that had appeared to Mary Jane slowly turned its head completely around at the neck. Then the ghost turned and walked away. It all made sense to Mary Jane Heaster now. Edward's erratic behavior, his obsession with keeping the doctor and all the mourners who came to pay their respects away from Zona. Edward Shue had murdered his wife. Mary Jane went to the local prosecutor, John Alfred Preston, who was, of course, skeptical, but he listened to all Mrs. Heaster said. He had his doubts about the ghost of Mary Jane Heaster's daughter appearing to her, but he did believe that something was off. Prosecutor Preston spoke with Dr. Knapp, who openly admitted he had not thoroughly examined the body and had his own questions about Zona's death. That's all Preston needed. He ordered Zona's body exhumed for an autopsy. Edward Shue protested the autopsy, but it was out of his hands now. Edward was so stressed by this development that he began to tell people that he knew he would be arrested for a crime. But most people he told had the same question. What crime? What had Edward done? Had Edward Shue really murdered his wife? On February 22nd, 1897, Zona Shue's body was exhumed and thoroughly examined by two doctors, including Dr. George Knapp, who had been doctor and coroner on her case when she died. We know what the doctors saw that day because of the local newspaper, the Pocahontas Times, reporting on the case. They wrote, "On the throat were the marks of fingers, indicating that she had been choked, that the neck was dislocated between the first and second vertebrae. The ligaments were torn and ruptured. The windpipe had been crushed at a point in front of the neck." Zona's death had not been natural. Edward Shue was arrested and charged with murder. But authorities had a big problem. They had no evidence for trial, no witnesses, only the autopsy and the word of Mary Jane Heaster that was based on the word of a ghost. Prosecutor Preston vowed that he would not give up. He continued to investigate Edward Shue. He looked into Shue's past. Remember, Shue said he had come to Greenbrier County because he was starting a new life after dealing with trying times. Trying times indeed. Prosecutor Preston learned that Edward Shue had been married twice before he married Zona. His first marriage to Allie Cutlip ended in divorce while Edward was in prison, serving time for stealing a horse. The ex-wife told police that Edward Hsu had been extremely violent and beat her frequently during their marriage. And Edward Hsu's second marriage to Lucy Tritt ended when his wife died under mysterious circumstances, 8 months after they had married. Preston also learned that Edward Hsu had boasted to men he was imprisoned with that he was going to marry at least 7 women over the course of his life. Prosecutor Preston determined that the mysterious death of Edward Hsu's previous wife and Hsu's history of violence was enough circumstantial evidence to bring Edward Hsu to trial. While in jail awaiting trial, Edward Hsu had boasted that he would never be found guilty of murder. He said there was no firm evidence that Zona had even been murdered. But Edward Hsu didn't know he had one thing to worry about: the testimony of the only eyewitness to the murder, his wife, Zona Hsu. Edward Hsu's trial began in late June of 1897. Prosecutor Preston called several people to the stand to testify against Edward. All of them referenced his odd and erratic behavior after his wife's death and during her wake and funeral. But Preston knew he had a big problem. He had no witnesses to the crime and no witnesses who could have placed Edward at the scene of the murder of Zona at the time the crime was committed. Edward Hsu's defense team included William Rucker and James Gardner. They made the call to allow their client to take the stand in his own defense. Edward Hsu strongly denied the charges against him, proclaiming his undying love for his wife and his devastation over her death. But as the Greenbrier Independent News would later report, Edward Hsu's testimony, manner, and so forth made an unfavorable impression on the spectators and the jury. Still, Prosecutor Preston was concerned. Preston considered including testimony about Zona's ghost at trial, but he knew it was only hearsay. Preston felt he would lose the case. He knew it was going to break Mary Jane Heaster's heart to not get justice for her daughter. But Prosecutor Preston hadn't counted on Edward's defense team making a critical mistake. They called Mary Jane Heaster to the stand. They did this to try to make a spectacle of Mrs. Heaster. They wanted the jury to see that she was an unbalanced woman who hated Edward Hsu and would do anything to try to get him convicted of murder, including fabricating a wild story about Zona appearing to her and making up a story that Edward Hsu had murdered her. But they opened the door for Mary Jane Heaster to tell Zona's story, the story of her own murder. And the more the defense questioned Mary Jane Heaster about the ghost of her daughter, the more the jury seemed to listen. Some leaned forward in their seats, seemingly enthralled by Mrs. Heaster's testimony. And the more the defense tried to trip up Mary Jane Heaster by trying to get her to admit she dreamed up visions of her daughter, the more they pushed that claim, the more Mary Jane Heaster pushed back. She refused to waver in her account of her daughter's ghost appearing to her. Her testimony was printed in the Greenbrier Independent on July 1st of 1897 and remains on record with the West Virginia State Archives. When asked by the defense lawyer, "Do you think that you actually saw her, Zona, in flesh and blood?" Mary Jane Heaster answered, "Yes, sir, I do. I told them the very dress that she was killed in, and when she went to leave me, she turned her head completely around and looked at me like she wanted me to know all about it." Again, the defense pressed her by asking, "Mrs. Heaster, don't you know that these visions, as you termed them or described them, were nothing more or less than 4 dreams founded upon your distress?" And Mary Jane Heaster answered resolutely by saying, "No, I don't know it. The Lord sent her to me to tell me about it. I was the only friend that she knew she could tell and put any confidence in. I was the nearest one to her." From the witness stand in the packed courtroom, Mrs. Heaster told the jury everything she could remember about the days Zona's ghost appeared, including the detailed account of how Edward Hsu had gone into a violent rage and murdered her, squeezing her neck off her body at the first vertebrae. Because the defense had called Mary Jane Heaster to the stand and opened the door for her to tell of Zona's ghost, telling her how she died, the judge had a hard time convincing the jury to disregard the story they had heard from Mary Jane Heaster. We'll never know if it was solely Mary Jane Heaster's testimony on behalf of her deceased daughter that led to the verdict that day or not. But after deliberating for an hour and 10 minutes, the jury handed down their verdict. On the charge of murder, Edward Shue was guilty. When the verdict was handed down, an angry mob organized and planned to break into prison and take Edward Shue and lynch him. But a man named George Hara heard of the plan and notified the sheriff, who was able to persuade the group that the jury had done their job and the law was taking it from here. Due to the circumstantial nature of the case against Edward Shue, he escaped the death penalty and was sentenced to life in West Virginia State Penitentiary in Moundsville. Zona Shue made history after she died. Her testimony from the grave is the only time testimony from a ghost was admitted as evidence in a U.S. Superior Court trial. Was it the source of conviction? Well, we'll never know. Was it a factor in the conviction of Edward Shue? Absolutely. Edward Shue's life sentence would only last 3 years. Epidemics of measles and pneumonia tore through prisons that spring, and Edward Shue became ill and died on March 13th of 1900. Mary Jane Heaster never recanted her story, but in recent years, there has been a discovery that brings her visions of Zona and her testimony into question. Historian Katie Lyle has investigated the case and found a clue that Mary Jane Heaster could have fabricated the whole ghost story. Lyle found that the Greenbrier Independent had printed the announcement of Zona's death on January 28, 1897. Coincidentally, a story that was printed on a nearby column in the paper mentioned a case of murder in Australia being solved after a few people saw a ghost of the murdered man sitting by a horse pond, the same pond into which his body had been thrown. No one had known what had happened to this man until the pond was searched and his body was found, and it was determined that he had indeed been murdered. Witnesses said they believed his ghost had appeared to them to tell them where he was, so justice could be served. Katie Lyle shared a theory in her book, The Man Who Wanted Seven Wives. Her theory was that Mary Jane Heaster read the story about the ghost of the murdered man helping to solve the crime and decided to use the same tactic to avenge her daughter's murder. That leaves us with a question. Did Mary Jane Heaster deliberately create the story, or had she subconsciously been influenced by the newspaper article and believed that she had seen Zona's ghost and all had truly been revealed to her? Mary Jane Heaster took the answer to that question to the grave with her when she died in 1916, laid to rest next to her dear daughter, Zona. The legend of Zona Shue has never faded. Just off Route 60 in Greenbrier County, West Virginia, there's a historical marker that commemorates the unique case and Zona's life. The inscription on the marker reads, "Interred in nearby cemetery is Zona Heaster Shue. Her death in 1897 was presumed natural until her spirit appeared to her mother to describe how she was killed by her husband, Edward. Autopsy on the exhumed body verified the apparition's account. Edward, found guilty of murder, was sentenced to state prison. This is the only known case in which testimony from a ghost helped convict a murderer." Maybe the folks in town knew things didn't add up with Zona's death and would have convicted Edward Shue without Zona's testimony from the grave. Or maybe the Greenbrier ghost is a reminder and a warning to all who would carry out evil acts that in time, the truth will be revealed, because dead women do tell tales. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you never miss updates and new episodes. And if you do want to dive deeper into the legend of the Greenbrier Ghost, you can find more in the show notes at southernmysteries.com. And there is a very easy way you can help me to continue to create Southern Mysteries by listening in the free Radio Public app for iOS or Android. When you listen there, I get paid, and the money goes directly toward the cost of hosting Southern Mysteries. And the folks at Radio Public have also made it easy for you to directly support the show from within their app. You can tap the tip button on my podcast page and leave me a one-time tip for any amount up to $100. I've had a lot of folks ask if they could support the show, and I've wanted to give you this option of one-time giving tipping for a while, but until now, there was no easy or sustainable way to make that happen. So I'm really thankful that Radio Public has a tipping option, and I'm thankful to you for leaving a tip if you're liking the show and looking forward to hearing more, because I look forward to sharing more. Thanks for listening.
It'll be all right. We're careful.